You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Glad to have you listening into our Monday show and proud to be joined, as always, by my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. We got a jam-packed show coming your way. It's Mock Draft Monday, a couple of listener entries that we will be breaking down today with eight selections, turning three picks into eight selections. We gave them a hard homework assignment, Rob, so we'll see how the work ended up coming back to us here for our Monday show. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Over the weekend, Jaron Reed found himself a new home pretty quickly, signing a one-year contract worth up to $7 million with the Kansas City Chiefs that will reunite him with Frank Clark. They used to play together in Seattle, as well as Chris Jones, one of the nastiest defensive lines now in the NFL, with Jaron Reed going to the two-time defending AFC champions. On the flip side, Seattle quickly went to work finding a replacement to help fill the void, bringing back veteran Al Woods, who last played on a football field with the Seahawks in 2019. He opted out of last year due to the COVID-19 pandemic after signing a one-year contract with the Jaguars. So really, it's going to feel like Al Woods never left. The Seahawks signed him before they actually released Jaron Reed. And I don't know about you, Rob, but I think the Woods addition, coupled with the depth and the young talent the Seahawks still have, I think they are in a position they can withstand the loss of Reed, even though that's a very good football player that's going to be tough to replace his production on an individual level.
Yeah, I think it's going to be tough to replace his production. I think it's going to be tough to replace his toughness. It's going to be very tough to replace just his durability and consistency. But at the same time, the NFL is changing, Corbin, as you well know. It's all about being able to affect the passer. And I think that the Seahawks made a calculated risk here in that they basically are prioritizing those outside pass rushers and instead are not so worried about the defensive tackles. As we talked about in several of our shows before, with Seattle bringing back Puna Ford, bringing back Cedric Lattimore, making the move for Kerry Hyder, then you have plenty of pass rushers from the interior. You feel pretty good about the exterior pass rushing because, of course, you have Daryl Taylor coming back. We didn't see anything from him. Alton Robinson during his rookie season was impressive. And then, of course, the big news is that you brought back two of your former most productive edge rushers in Carlos Dunlap and Benson Mayoa. And so because of all of that, yeah, I think that Seattle – is feeling pretty good about their defensive line. I think that they feel as confident as they have along the defensive line front as, you know, probably since their Super Bowl years. At the same time, I do think that it is a big loss to have Jaron Reed go. And I think that it's interesting, as you just mentioned, how quickly he was snatched up by a Super Bowl contending Kansas City Chiefs team. But, you know, kudos to the Seahawks. They had to make some tough decisions here. I think that they made the right decisions and be able to bring in that many more players who are most likely to be able to affect the quarterback. And then again, with Al Woods, talking about a guy who's 6'4", 330 pounds. Whatever that Jaron Reed was able to provide you against the run, Al Woods certainly can give you that. And again, I don't think that Al Woods is the pass rusher that Jaron Reed was, but I think that, again, because Seattle was able to bring back some of the other players they did, specifically with Mayoa, with Dunlap, and then bring in Kerry Hyder, I think they have gone above and beyond in already replacing what they might have lost with Jaron Reed with those players. So, again, I think that this is all said and done. It is definitely Seattle has improved their defensive line as well as giving themselves a little bit more salary cap flexibility.
I think in a perfect world, the Seahawks would have loved to have Jaron Reed back. And from everything that I've been told, they were willing to add one more year onto his contract, lower that cap hit for 2021. Jaron Reed wanted that 3 or 4 year deal. And if he wasn't going to get that, he would have rather just hit free agency next season when the cap is supposed to go back up quite a bit. The Seahawks didn't want to hold on to him with that $13.9 million cap hit. So it just reached a standstill. Neither side was going to budge. And the Seahawks needed to make a move so they could go out and re-sign Carlos Dunlap. So in the end, this is what had to happen. And Ultimately, the Seahawks decided we would rather have two or three capable edge rushers than bring back Jaron Reed at the cost that he's going to be at right now. That cap hit is just too expensive for us to carry with our salary cap issues that we're dealing with. So I think kudos to John Schneider here, because you do go out and you get three guys that combined for 20 sacks last year. When you're talking about Carlos Dunlap, Kerry Hyder, and Benson Mayoa, you're getting three different style rushers. You've got Kerry Hyder that's more of a hand technician, not the greatest athlete, but plays with a relentless motor. You've got Dunlap, who uses his length so well, is sneaky fast still at his age, and a guy that can use a couple of really good power moves to get off blockers. And then you got Benson Mayoa, who's a twitchy edge rusher that can blow by people. So you've got a little bit of everything. And then, of course, Daryl Taylor and Alton Robinson. This, to me, is the good part here. Now you're not putting the pressure on those two where they have to start for you this year, and you can get their feet wet more. Let them get some reps in a rotation. And I still think the idea maybe Daryl Taylor's playing Sam linebacker for you is not far-fetched either. And I think that would be an exciting development for Seattle, because he dropped back in coverage some at Tennessee. He has experience doing that, and you would instantly get an upgrade from a pass rushing standpoint. If Bruce Irvin can play that spot the way that he did for so many years for Seattle, then Daryl Taylor could do that. I think Alton Robinson's more of a traditional end. So this is really looking like the best depth they've had on the outside since 2013. I'm not kidding. When you look from top to bottom, if they can get production from Taylor and Robinson with those veterans they've brought back, that's going to be a scary group that's going to make the interior better by default. You look at the fact Puna Ford really emerged as a pass rusher second half last season, is just scratching the surface. Lattimore is a player that's got a basketball background that could develop into a pass rushing defensive tackle. And LJ Collier at 280-plus pounds already played 160 snaps at 3-tech last year and had success. He could play more this year with Jaron Reed being out of the picture, and it may end up being better for both the player and the team. And so, again, the players have to go out on the field and prove it, but I think that overall the Seahawks made the decision that they had to here. Sometimes you got to let go of one player to really push forward, and that's what they did here, maximizing their money.
Yeah, I think it's very similar to what Seattle did a couple of years ago when they traded Frank Clark and they wound up being able to acquire all those draft picks. Of course, one of them wound up being DK Metcalf. And so you gave away a really good player, and that's always tough. I think the Seattle, again, here with Jaron Reed, you're going to watch Jaron Reed continue to have a great deal of success, in my opinion, in Kansas City. But at the same time, Seattle had to improve their own roster. And so I think the way that you put it, Corbin, I think it really summarizes it very well. And that, again, you had to kind of choose between a guy that you really like, but is somewhat limited in what he can do in Jaron Reed, that defensive tackle position, for his, let's be real, pretty bloated contract. You gave that away and instead were able to either acquire or reacquire three different very varied pass rushers. And I think that that's more important in today's NFL. And it's not just in today's NFL broadly. It's in today's NFL with the NFC West specifically. Oh, by the way, over the weekend, since we've last spoken, the San Francisco 49ers made the biggest, boldest move of any club so far in the NFL draft. And basically what they're doing is putting their cards on the table and saying, we want a new young quarterback. And so, again, it makes more sense from Seattle's perspective to be able to bring in that many more pass rushers, whether it be Jimmy Garoppolo, basically in a one-year extension, or whether it be one of these young quarterbacks that they're very likely to draft. Still, Seattle is now looking to be able to create as much of a pass rush against those quarterbacks than they would be in slowing down the run. And you think about the Los Angeles Rams, you think about the Arizona Cardinals. Again, it's all about affecting their quarterbacks, not so much stopping the run. The one team that you were worried about running down your throat was the San Francisco 49ers, and that's what made it a little bit of a gamble to get rid of Jaron Reed. But because Seattle basically covered themselves by bringing in Al Woods, because the 49ers are clearly trying to pivot a little bit more to the passing game, then yeah, to me, it makes all the sense in the world for Seattle to make the adjustment that they have, bring in some different outside varied pass rushers rather than putting all of your money into one defensive tackle who is a good player. Again, a player I really liked for Seattle, but at the same time probably was getting a little bit more money than he should have gotten in the first place.
When we return to the second quarter, it's Mock Draft Monday. We gave you a homework assignment, 12s. You had to turn John Schneider's three picks into eight new selections in the 2021 NFL Draft. We're going to look at two listener submissions here for the remainder of the show. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's Mock Draft Monday, Rob, as we do each and every week this time of year. John Schneider, in his 11 previous drafts with the Seahawks, has never selected fewer than eight players, and there have been several times he's had double-digit draft picks. This year, it's going to be much, much tougher for Schneider to exit the 2021 draft with that many selections because Seattle currently, after trading for Gabe Jackson, has only three draft picks. They have no first rounder. They have no third rounder. So just one pick the first 2 days, and then they've got a fourth round pick and a seventh round pick. That's not much ammunition to be able to recoup draft picks. And yet that was the challenge that we gave the 12s for today's episode. You needed to turn three draft picks into eight new selections and only having one pick in the first three rounds to do so. Of course, with all the mock draft generators that are out there, Pro Football Network, the Draft Network, as well as Pro Football Focus, there are others. There's a lot of different options out there for you to try to tackle this task. We ended up making a tough choice picking two different mock drafts. And our first one here is coming from Stone. And this one was done on Pro Football Focus's mock draft simulator. Rob, eight selections, and it was all kicked off by trading down from pick 56 to pick 74 with the Washington football team. And this would be a great haul for the Seahawks to get back. I don't know that this would be feasible, but if there's a player that Washington really wanted badly, the trade ended up sending pick 74, pick 82, pick 124, and pick 244 to the Seahawks for 56. Again, this seems a little far-fetched to me. The Seahawks would get that much back. But if there's a player that Ron Rivera and company wanted really badly, I suppose he could talk him into giving up that kind of draft compensation. And that sets up the Seahawks favorably here. They're going to have two more trades to add two more picks. But ultimately, that's going to allow Stone to be able to turn three selections into eight new draft picks.
Yeah, which we got to give Stone some credit here. I think that anybody who is able to turn three draft picks into eight draft picks, even in a projection like this, you're doing some legitimate work there. I think it's going to be very difficult, frankly, for John Schneider to be able to pull off something as similar as this, as being able to turn three draft picks into eight without trading any future 2022, 2023 draft picks, or trading any veteran players. I think that's going to be very, very difficult to do. I'm not saying it's impossible. We've seen John Schneider be able to work miracles on draft day with the relationships that he has. But again, I think this is the year that the Seattle is very likely to wind up trading with less than the eight draft picks that has basically been the bare minimum that John Schneider has worked with in the past. But if we look at this particular draft class, again, all credit to Stone for being able to pull this off. I think that when you look at this class, just again, the sheer number of players, eight players, is really intriguing. Creed Humphrey, I'm going to let you kind of talk about him just for a moment, Corbin. But, to me, this is exactly where Seattle has to kind of focus in on their rebuilding along the offensive line. You have to get bigger and better at the center position, or at least the interior offensive line. I think that Creed Humphrey can do that if he is available to Seattle. you're halfway through the third round, then I think that that is going to be an absolute home run pick for the Seahawks. Again, being able to trade down as well as getting a guy who, at least in my opinion, could be a plug-and-play starter at the center position.
Humphrey would be such a difference from Ethan Posick. When you're talking about play style, this guy is a battering ram. He wants to bully people off the line of scrimmage. He's an imposing offensive lineman. Doesn't have super long arms, so there's, of course, been some talk about that. But I don't think that's near as big of a deal at the center position as it is at, say, tackle. I think at tackle it is a bigger deal to have longer arms. Center, in the middle of the line, I don't think that's as big of a deal. I think he has underrated quickness and mobility, not necessarily a strong point in his game, but he can play in a zone blocking scheme. He can get downhill. That's a big strength for him. He can get to the second level. I think he's a solid pass protector. I'll be surprised if the Oklahoma standout is available in the middle of the third round. There's been some first round buzz around this kid. I would not be surprised if he's picked at the end of the first, early second. Might not even be close to where the Seahawks pick at 56 originally, let alone trading down. But if he does fall this far, that is the position you've got to address. So Humphrey at 74, as you said, that is a slam dunk. If they can get him, a guy that I think comes in right away and takes the starting spot immediately from Ethan Posick.
I agree. I'm really intrigued by Creed Humphrey. The fact that he has played as a diverse offense, I think is one of the guys that is going to make a lot of sense for the Seahawks because, of course, as we talked about so many times, it's going to be really interesting to see the way that Seattle targets certain offensive linemen. With Humphrey, he is very powerful. He's kind of a short and squatty kind of a guy, but at the same time, his success against all levels of competition for Oklahoma, obviously a team that has gone to the playoff the last couple of years, goes to the Senior Bowl as well, was very impressive there. I think he's a terrific football player. I would be surprised if he is available at number 74 overall, but we have seen interior offensive linemen drop down on draft day, so there is a possibility. And the other player I want to make sure that we talk about is Levi Onwuzurike, the defensive tackle from the University of Washington, who Stone has Seattle selecting number 86 overall with their next selection. It's interesting that you mentioned the relatively short arms of Creed Humphrey, Corbin, because Levi is the exact opposite of that. He is kind of a short, stubby kind of a frame, but he's got very long arms. And so there are some comparisons to be made to Seattle's own LJ Collier. I think Zurique is that much quicker off the snap and is going to be able to give you some kind of a penetrator from that three technique position. I am shocked that on the Pro Football Focus grade that they would have given Seattle a C+ for taking Levi Onwuzurike at number 86 overall, and you only get a C+. In my opinion, that would be an A in terms of value at that point. I love his length. I still think this is a player who is still just basically scratching the surface of his potential. He is one of those guys who is very reliable in terms of his durability, in terms of the consistency, in terms of the effort, and that would be one of my only knocks, is that, again, Seattle has some talent that they're bringing back on the defensive line, as we talked about in the first quarter. To me, there's a little bit of Kerry Hyder in Levi Onwuzurike, and so I don't know that you want to double up in that regard. On the flip side, Seattle's next couple of picks with Tylan Wallace, the wide receiver at Oklahoma State, as well as Hamza Nazir Ildin, the free safety strong safety / outside linebacker that's coming from Florida State. I mentioned outside linebacker because this is a young man who's roughly 6'3", 220 pounds. All he has played at Florida State primarily has been that safety position. And everybody, when they hear 6'3", 220 at safety for Seattle, they're going to think Cam Chancellor all over again. Sure. That's a really exciting idea. At the same time, safety is one of Seattle's strongest positions. But at the same time, I don't know that Nazir Ildin can't play that outside linebacker position. He is absolutely physical, absolutely has the speed. So to me, that's one of the things that's intriguing about that. And I like the Tylan Wallace selection, the wide receiver from Oklahoma State. You know, when you think about the Cowboys, you usually think about wide receivers who just go and get the football because Oklahoma State's offense is as successful as it is. Tylan Wallace is a physical guy. He's also a very good run blocker. In fact, I was asking some scouts here for a recent article about who's the best run blocking wide receiver in all of college football and all of the 2021 NFL draft. And Tylan Wallace is 6 foot. 195 pounds, roughly, got a couple of votes. And so that just kind of speaks to his physicality, which we know fits the Seahawks to a T.
And let's look at a couple other picks, because we're talking about defensive backs and receivers, and Stone did a good job of adding players with value at certain positions in this draft. On day three, pick 129, Trill Williams, the corner out of Syracuse. We talked about him as well as Melifonwu, his teammate, who is probably going to be long gone at this point. But Trill Williams is a player that had 4 interceptions in the past couple of seasons. He had 2 defensive touchdowns. He's a guy that can be a clutch playmaker. I'd like to see him get his hands on the ball a little bit more, but he has the length, he has the size, the athleticism. He plays the aggressiveness and the physicality that Pete Carroll wants on the outside. And again, he's a playmaker. He's a guy that's got the ball skills, just needs a little more consistency in that area. But I think he would be a player Pete Carroll would have a lot of fun working with in the secondary. And that is a position at corner. Witherspoon's on a 1-year contract, kind of a prove-it deal. You've got Trey Flowers with 1 year left in his contract. DJ Reed has 1 year left in his contract. Long-term, they need answers at that position. And I think that Trill Williams can become that guy as a early day three selection for the Seahawks. And then at pick 150, going back to the wide receiver position, Amari Rodgers out of Clemson. To me, he checks off a couple of boxes the Seahawks absolutely need to fill. You talked about the run blocking aspect from Wallace out of Oklahoma State. Amari Rodgers is kind of that pinball out of the slot. Short, thick, stocky guy that can break tackles. You can run jet sweeps with him. He's got some special teams experience. He's tough as nails, catching passes in the middle of the field, and he's got championship pedigree coming out of Clemson. So I think when you look at the after-the-catch capabilities and the versatility he provides your offense, being able to occasionally run the football, he's going to get after it. He can play special teams. I really like the value of that pick for Russell Wilson adding another target at pick 150.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that, when, again, you mentioned the kind of championship pedigree. You want to get your quarterback excited. You want to get the fan base excited. Bring in a guy who physically reminds you a little bit of Golden Tate in terms of his size, his physicality, his toughness, his versatility. That's exactly the type of players that are going to get people excited. And Amari Rodgers can basically do a little bit of everything. And so, to me, he's exactly the type of receiver that Seattle, frankly, has been lacking over these last couple of years. Now, again, as I kind of was questioning a little bit the selection of Nasir Adine, the safety slash outside linebacker from Florida State in this particular draft, while I like the player and I think that he would be a quality addition at that point in the draft, the same kind of questions I would have about O'Brien Goodson, the defensive lineman from Memphis, that Stone has Seattle ticket number 244 overall. Now, when you're talking about a 7th round selection, Corbin, you can't really criticize too much, but at the same time, we are talking about a defensive lineman here who recently measured in at 5'10 and a half, and 275 pounds. And so Seattle has already got a kind of a shorter, stubby defensive tackle and a very good one at that in Puna Ford. I just have a hard time believing they're going to be willing to do the exact same thing with another defensive tackle. This guy is a penetrator. He's a guy that can make some plays for you. But again, he just lacks the size. I think that most likely is going to push him out of the draft entirely. I think he's an intriguing undrafted free agent kind of a caliber player, but I'm not so sure this is a guy that Seattle will be investing one of their late round selections in if they had that opportunity.
Yeah, I think he would be a fun priority undrafted free agent as a guy that if you could put another 10, 12 pounds on him with the athleticism he presents, he's a guy that ran a 5-second flat 40. So he's got decent athleticism for a defensive tackle. But right now, his build is better suited to play the 5-tech position. You just got Kerry Hyder. You already have LJ Collier and Rasheem Green. It doesn't seem like to me the type of player the Seahawks will be drafting at that position. I think they'd be looking more for 290, 295 pound guy that's a little better against the run. That is a major knock on Goodson's game. So I would not see this being a player they would draft, but maybe end of the 7th, he is going to be in the mix there. And then pick 250, Nashawn Wright out of Oregon State. You and I have talked about him a few times. He projects as a Seahawks corner from a physical standpoint, 6'4". He did have 5 interceptions for the Beavers the last 2 years. He has the ability to turn and run with guys, kind of stiff hips, not necessarily great in and out of his breaks, not a guy that's got great change of direction skills. And I think technique-wise, it would be a little bit of a project for Pete Carroll. But if there's a position he's willing to take on projects, we've seen what Carroll and his staff have done with corners. When you look at the physical tools that Wright has and just the pure size, the 6'4" height, really long arms, they've had a track record with Oregon State corners before. Brandon Browner had a pretty good run in Seattle earlier. So maybe Wright becomes that next guy they bring in, take a flyer on, and try to develop. I think him at 250 makes a lot of sense because he's probably going to be a coveted player in undrafted free agency if he is not picked in the 6th or 7th round.
No, I absolutely agree with you. To me, that seems like so much more of an actual Seahawks draft pick. And as you mentioned, Seattle does have a little bit of a tracker at Oregon State. And give Jonathan Smith and Oregon State some credit. This is a program on the rise. I would not be surprised at all if Nashawn winds up being drafted significantly earlier than that.
Well, he returned for the 3rd quarter. We're going to move on to our next Mock Draft Monday submission, another Pro Football Focus generated mock draft, and we're going to be dissecting those 8 selections. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We've been telling you about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. Built Bar is the amazing low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, amazing tasting protein bar with 100% chocolate in all bars. Now is the time to find out which Built Bar is the best. It is Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is Caramel Brownie versus Coconut Brownie Chunk. It's the battle of the brownies. They're both delicious. This is going to be a toss-up. Who wins this one? Go to BuiltBar.com or do @bar_build on Twitter. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That is LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best-tasting protein bar. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined, as always, by my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. The NFL draft is weeks away. It's time to start following our Locked On NFL draft duo. The Draft Dudes podcast watches every prospect so that you don't have to. And the Locked On NFL draft podcast is your daily draft news and mock draft podcast. Follow Locked On NFL Draft and Draft Dudes on the radio.com app or wherever you get podcasts. It's officially Mock Draft Monday. We had a chance to go through Stone's submission last quarter. Now we're going to move to our second selection of the day. Again, a really tall task trying to turn 3 draft picks into 8 selections. Our second submission that we're going to dissect today comes from Chris Calvert. And again, this one was done on Pro Football Focus's generator. A little different strategy this time. And to me, this is probably what the Seahawks would have to do more realistically if they're wanting to end up with 8 picks rather than getting 4 picks back in exchange for trading down one time. Going to be really hard-pressed to make that happen unless it's a bunch of 7th-round picks that you're getting back in return. This particular draft, Chris Calvert actually had 4 trades in a row before the Seahawks finally picked. Their first pick came at selection 113. So we're talking into the 4th round here. The Seahawks not picking once the first 3 rounds. There's a strong possibility that John Schneider could do that, though, if he's going to remain committed to having 7 or 8 draft picks. That might be the only way they can get it done.
Yeah, if that is the strategy, is to try to get 8 draft picks, and again, not trading any future selections, not trading any current players on the roster, then yeah, I think that the way that Chris Calvert went about this draft is exactly what John Schneider is ultimately going to have to do, is he's going to have to continue to trade down each and every time that he is on the clock on day 2, which of course, right now, Seattle only has the 1 selection. Number 56 overall, right smack dab in the middle of the 2nd round. But theoretically, if you were able to trade down from number 56 overall into the later portion of the second round or early portion of the third round, and then trade that down again and again and again, you can see how you might be able to acquire a number of draft picks after initially only having the three. Now, again, this is kind of an exercise in, I don't know, maybe arguably futility, because this is a point where how realistic is it that some team is going to value number 56 overall that much? That's what's going to be interesting here. But I do think that there is a possibility that Seattle is going to be able to develop some interest because of the unique talent of this year's draft class. And we haven't talked about this specifically too much, Corbin, but just the quarterback in general, this is a really, really good quarterback class, and those are rare. This is also a really good offensive tackle class, and those are rare. And so because of those two factors, Seattle, you might be able to acquire, you might be able to create some interest in your selection, just because I think that you're going to see four, possibly five quarterbacks go in the first round. And once they go, then all those other teams out there who were so confident that some quarterback was going to fall into their lap in the second round, now they're starting to panic. And so, again, I think there is a chance that this might actually be able to work out. And, again, a lot of credit to Chris Colbert. It's the same with Stone in our initial mock draft. They did a great job of turning, chicken stuff into chicken salad, because, you know, again, it'd be very, very difficult to be able to turn three picks into eight selections. But if the Seahawks are able to get a player the caliber of Kendrick Green at number 113 overall, the way they did in Chris Calvert's mock draft, then I think this is a huge, huge move for the Seahawks. Now, part of it is because I am a huge Kendrick Green fan. I think that he comes off the ball really well. I think that he is physical at the point of attack. I love the versatility that he has shown in playing both guard positions as well as center for Illinois. When he signed with the Fighting Illini years ago, he was a defensive tackle. And so for him to carry over that same type of physicality to the offensive side of the ball, we know the Seahawks have prioritized that in the past. And I am telling you right now, that Kendrick Green walks into the NFL and he's going to wind up becoming a starter early in his NFL career. I can't guarantee it's going to happen his rookie season. I don't know where he's going to get drafted, but I am telling you, this guy is a future starter. And so again, if he is one of the players that the Seahawks draft in the 2021 selection, I really think that they have one of their guard positions locked down for the long-term future.
And this would give the Seahawks a lot of flexibility because, as you said, Green can play both guard spots. He's played center before, so you could put him at center to start his career in the NFL, or you could slide Damian Lewis to center, and that was something Pete Carroll mentioned in his last press conference after they lost their playoff game. And so that would still be an option on the table. When you have a player of that caliber, again, I think sometimes some of these teams outthink themselves trying to pick for positional needs when – you just got to go pick the best player that's available. And in this case, you can check off both boxes. You can bring in the best offensive lineman potentially available at that stage in the draft. And he's a guy that can play center or guard. So this would be a really good pick there. I don't think he'd be available that deep into the draft. But again, as you mentioned earlier on the show, if there's a position group that has shown it'll drop at times in the draft, there'll be unexpected drops for players. Interior offensive line, particularly center, has been a position that we have seen that happen in recent years. I really like the next two picks in this draft from Chris Colbert, though. Pick 116, wide receiver Cade Johnson out of South Dakota State. We've talked a lot about the need for another player that can run routes out of the slot. Cade Johnson is not necessarily a burner. This is not a guy that is going to be beating people downfield the way the Seahawks thought Philip Dorsett was going to do for them before he got hurt. Not that style player, but he's so quick and he's such a savvy route runner. And you want to talk about a player, I don't care if he was playing in the Division I or Division III level, whatever level he's playing at, 28 touchdown receptions over the last couple of seasons for the Jackrabbits. This guy knows how to get into the end zone. He's a tough-minded receiver in the middle of the field. Really good route runner. I think he would be a lot of fun teaming up with Tyler Lockett, and Lockett's got 1 year left in his contract, so this might be your guy that ends up being his heir apparent. I really like Cade Johnson a lot. Seattle hasn't drafted small school players very often, but this might be a player they use an exception on, because he had a great Senior Bowl and he had a really good pro day to go with it. So his stock is rising. And then at 129, Benjamin St. Juste, another one of my favorite corners from this class, 6'3", 200. He's got 32-inch arms. So he checks off all the size and length metrics the Seahawks look for. This is a player that did not have an interception in college, so that is something that concerns me a little bit. But he did have 10 passes defensed during the 2019 season for the Golden Gophers, so he has shown he can get his hands on the football. He did that regularly at the Senior Bowl practices and in the game as well. Sticky coverage, a physical player, sometimes can get a little bit too aggressive with his hands, but the Seahawks have not shied away from corners that do that. They will work with him on his technique. I think when you look at the size, his willingness to come up and tackle people, he's got great tackling technique against the run, blowing up screens. He's a guy that can run downfield with receivers. I think that St. Juste is one of the most intriguing prospects as far as Seahawk caliber corners that's in this draft class.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, Corbin. I mean, I think that you look at St. Juste, that's one of the exciting things from a Seahawk perspective. I think there's a lot of things to be a little bit nervous about with the 2021 draft. Obviously, having three selections will do that to you. But at the same time, I think that if you look at the long-term concerns about cornerback, that is one of the positions that Seattle has really excelled at on draft day. And this particular draft has a lot of tall, long arm cornerbacks. And so I think that St. Juste is one of the ones that makes the most sense. We talked about Nashawn Wright in our previous draft, that I think is another one who makes a lot of sense, just really checks the boxes of what Seattle has traditionally preferred at the wide receiver, at the cornerback position. And then I jumped ahead of myself. The wide receiver position, while Seattle has struggled in the fourth round, Cade Johnson is a receiver that I think makes a lot of sense for Seattle. Just his quickness, just the production. And you mentioned the fact that Seattle has generally veered away from small school players, and that is true, at least until the late rounds. But at the same time, those guys who have had success at the Senior Bowl, Seattle has shown a little bit more interest in players who have starred in Mobile than most clubs out there, if you look at every one of the 32 NFL teams. So Kay Johnson, Benjamin St. Juste, are two of the players who have done exactly that. And so I think it would very much be in Seattle's wheelhouse if they were available at number 116, number 129 overall. Now, that's one of the interesting things about this particular mock draft, Corbin, is that, our selector here, Chris Calvert, he has a whole selection of picks, 116, 129, 138, 145. If John Schneider was tearing his hair out on day one and day two of the draft, at least in this projection, then day three, he is going to be like a kid in a candy store because he has so many selections. You talked about Kay Johnson, Benjamin St. Juste. I think that another one of those players that really would be intriguing for the Seahawks would be the BYU left tackle, Brady Christensen, who doesn't get any of the attention that BYU's quarterback, Zach Wilson, quite possibly a top three overall selection in this year's draft class, or even the defensive tackle, a player I've talked about a little bit, Kyrys Tonga. Both of them have generated a bunch of interest. But Brady Christensen, on the other hand, is 6'6", he's 300 pounds. He very rarely gave up any type of pass rush. He was also very effective in the running game. He's not quite as physical as I think the Seahawks have generally preferred in the past. And obviously you had the level of competition questions. But at the same time, at this point in the draft, to me, the Seahawks are going to try to develop somebody to be the heir apparent to Dwayne Brown at that left tackle position. Brady Christensen, from BYU would make a lot of sense at this point in the draft.
And he had a really good pro day too. You want to talk about a lineman that helped bolster his stock by doing some pretty crazy things in the athletic testing to go with the fact that he was one of college football's best pass protectors a year ago. Somebody's going to get really good value if he falls into day three, and maybe the Seahawks will have interest. He could play some guard too in a pinch if he wanted to. There's some versatility to his game. Rounding out the rest of this draft, we talked about Amari Rodgers in the last mock draft. He goes to the Seahawks in this one, doubling up at the receiver position again. 169, Aaron Banks, the guard out of Notre Dame. 222, Malik Herring, defensive end out of Georgia. And then 250, Darren Hall, the corner out of San Diego State. Maybe the player there that I don't know if I would say that I'm confused about the selection, but when you look at Malik Herring, we've talked about Kerry Hyder already in the show, his addition coming to Seattle. Herring's a 280-pound defensive end. He looks to me like a guy that you would see in a 3-4 system because of his size. Not a great athlete necessarily, not a guy that's going to be winning with speed off the edge, and he never had more than 2 sacks in a season for the Bulldogs, but at his size, he's a capable run defender. He's a guy that can hold up at the point of attack, could maybe play that 5-tech position. And at pick 222, it makes some sense. I just look at the bodies that Seattle already has on the roster, though, with Hyder being signed, LJ Collier, Rasheem Green, Alton Robinson even played some of that base defensive end position at 270 pounds last year. I don't know that there's necessarily a need there for him unless you look at Herring as a player. We can add a few more pounds on him, and he's going to play defensive tackle for us. Then if that's the mindset, I absolutely could see Herring being a solid pick at 222.
No, I could as well, and I think that's a really good point. It's you're looking at the body types on your current roster, and you know, that's one of the things that the Seattle has been willing to roll the dice in these late round selections and really go for broke, really try to find a unicorn, try to find somebody who's unique. Now, obviously, we Stephon Sullivan, the tight end slash wide receiver slash defensive end, who now is a member of the Carolina Panthers, but I mention him because he is exactly that type of a guy. Is a guy who is a little bit unique. Let's roll the dice on, see what winds up happening. You know, you have a guy like John Ursua on the flip side, who pretty much is what he is. He's a slot receiver and one who I think is going to be very effective someday for the Seahawks or for another NFL club. But you know, that was one of the reasons why he wound up not making Seattle's opening day roster, because that's basically that's all he is, even as good of a player as he is. So that to me is one of the things that's interesting about a player like a Malik Herring, is that he would be a little bit of the same body type. And so I'm not so sure that's what Seattle would do. And it's kind of the flip side. When you look at the Darren Hall, the last selection that Chris Colbert made here, the cornerback from San Diego State, he's got a little shorter arm. Seattle has, as many people know, Seattle has generally preferred these corners with the 32-inch arms. Darren Hall is just a little bit over 30 inches. He does play with physicality. He is a good quality athlete. He played both corner and safety for San Diego State. So he's a good player, but he very much is a little bit of a departure from what the Seahawks have traditionally looked for in the past. And I would mention the big guard, Aaron Banks, who I would be shocked if Aaron Banks is available at 169 overall. Certainly would give him a higher grade than the C-plus that the Pro Football Focus gave Chris Colbert for this draft. But at the same time, he would absolutely be a Mike Solari kind of a guy who is just going to knock people off the ball, but isn't necessarily going to be as fleet of foot in getting to the second level. So to me, that's one of the interesting things about Chris Colbert's draft here, is that I do like the strategy he took early on in trading down, kind of matriculating his way down the draft board, slowly kind of building up a little bit more draft commodities and selections to hit on day 3. And I think this would be a fun draft for the Seahawks. I just don't know that you have enough difference makers, and that is the gamble. Is that if you're going to continue to trade down, then a lot of these day 3 picks are going to wind up being day 3 cuts, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's the big issue here. Do you want to have 3 picks and keep that pick at 56 and have a chance at really getting an instant starter? Or do you take that gamble? We can find some diamonds in the rough on day 3. And the Seahawks have had success doing that throughout the John Schneider era. But again, there's a lot of risk to that. Maybe this year is the year to do that, though, because you haven't had normal scouting. You haven't had a scouting combine. As I've mentioned a few times, this might be the year that you see some really good players that normally wouldn't fall through the cracks do just that, and they're available on day 3. And so maybe having a bunch more of 5th, 6th, 7th round picks would be advantageous for Schneider. We just don't know. It's just going to be a very unprecedented draft compared to what we normally see. We'll just have to see how it shakes out. But both these entries had really good value on day 3, filling positions of need, both short and long term, for the Seahawks. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Make sure to subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. When we return for our Tuesday show, we'll have the latest on the free agency front. And we're going to continue our draft preview back on the offensive side of the football, checking out the running back position. Might not be an area the Seahawks have much need now with Chris Carson being back, but you know Pete Carroll and John Schneider are always looking closely at who's available in the backfield. Thanks for listening in. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.